Boomer Radio on Freedom 95 with your host, Julie Patterson.
Welcome to the show. We're glad you're listening today. Happy Saturday. I'm excited to welcome Andy Ray back into the studio.
Thank you, Julie.
Andy is with Arts Channel Indy, and he also is our movie reviewer. He's been doing movie reviews with us for the past several years. So the show that we're going to focus on today is going to recap 2018 and your favorite films of 2018.
Yes, and we probably should have done this a few weeks ago, but our schedules just didn't really mesh.
Right, we didn't mesh, but that's
so,
okay.
Anyway, I'm here now, and it's always difficult to try and narrow this list to 10 films. There's always a few you leave out and you wish you had room for.
Sure.
Well, so it is what it is.
Maybe that's another show.
11 through 20. No. So number 10 on my list was Jason Reitman's Tully. It had Charlize Theron. She played Marlo, who is a mother of two elementary elementary children, and a new baby. She had a good husband. He was always eager and willing to help with homework, put the kids to bed and so forth, but his job made him travel more than he wanted, than she would like. So she hired a nighttime nanny. The nanny was named Tully, and she was played by Mackenzie Davis, and she would show up at night and take care of the baby.
Okay.
It worked out great. Tully was a real gem. She instantly bonded with the baby and all the family members, and, you know, so far, so good. Now, she even made cookies for Marlo to take to school to say that these are my cookies that I made. Yeah,
yeah,
see, she's that good.
Meyer has made cookies for my family before.
Uh-huh. Okay. Now, when
things go get twisted,
well,
right?
When Marlo and Tully decide to drive into town and bar hop, they turn the radio on, and there's Cyndi Lauper's Girls Just Want to Have Fun. I thought to myself, I know where this is going to go, and I don't really like it, you know? But the screenplay goes in a totally different direction. It goes a lot deeper than I thought it was going to. I really liked this movie. It should have been released now instead of last spring.
I think it
would have gotten Oscar consideration.
Okay.
It's that good.
Okay.
It would have. What's the twist?
They like each other?
I can't tell you that.
Oh,
I'm not
going
to give it away. Come on.
Right.
Okay. Number 9 on my list is called If Beale Street Could Talk.
Oh, yeah. I've heard really good things about
this. Yes, it's a Barry Jenkins film. He did Moonlight 2 years ago that won Best Picture. And Moonlight I liked, but this one I actually like a little better. It's based on James Baldwin's novel, 1974 novel, If Beale Street Could Talk. And the story is about Tish and Fonny. They're two young people, young lovers. Their first baby's on the way. It's a beautiful story. The only problem is Fonny's in prison for a crime he didn't commit.
Oh, that's terrible. Now, is this the Regina King character,
the one that he's married to?
Okay,
Regina King is the girl is played by Kiki Layne, who's a newcomer. Regina King's her mother.
Oh, okay.
And Regina King's very understanding and sympathetic.
She got a Golden Globe for the role.
Yes, she did. And might very well get an Oscar for the role, too. The other mother, Fonny's mother, is not as understanding. She's very uptight, religious woman, and there's brilliant dynamic amongst the family members, her family, his family. And I credit James Baldwin's writing, although I'll say this, for a movie that is based on a novel, it doesn't seem like it's based on a novel.
Hmm.
It's not real preachy and talky, as you might expect.
Okay. It's set in Memphis, though, right?
That's set in Memphis. No.
Famous Beale
no,
Street
it isn't.
Is.
No.
No?
It's set in New York. It's called If Beale Street Could Talk because, as the titles explained at the beginning, Beale Street is everywhere. There's Beale Streets. That's just a symbolic name. It could be Beale Street. New Orleans, Memphis, Miami, Chicago, wherever. But there's a lot of social criticism here on the plight of African-American men, which is still relevant today.
Yeah.
Number 8 on my list is called The Ballad of Buster Scruggs. This was a Joel and Ethan Coen film. It's another Western, like O Brother, Where Art Thou? Or No Country for Old Men. They really excel at the Western. They parody it without spoofing it. It's not Blazing Saddles. It's not just silly spoof. It's a parody, but it's paying homage to the American Western.
Okay.
This one is 6 individual stories. It's like an anthology. Some of the stories are funny. Some are sad. Some are riveting. So if you don't like one, each story is only an average of about 20 minutes long.
Okay.
So if you're not interested, just hang on. You know, take a bathroom break.
Another one's coming. Okay.
Some of my favorites were Tom Waits doing a solo turn as a gold prospector. He's excellent. That shows up in about the middle. my two favorites were the first one and the last one. The first story is Tim Blake Nelson, who plays a singing cowboy named Buster Scruggs, and he comes into the town and criticizes the town folk. But his speech is so literate, they don't even understand that they're being made fun of.
Oh.
And that's another typical Coen Brothers, mm-hmm. Oh Brother, We're Out There, Where Art Thou, had a lot of that too, mm-hmm. where the characters spoke above where their level in society would have you believe they should speak. The last story is my favorite. It all takes place in a stagecoach. Five travelers going to a distant motel or hotel one night, and Tyne Daly's an uptight religious lady who's put off by the bad breath of the fur prospector next to her, and he's another one who speaks surprisingly literate and wordy for a fur trapper, a bearded fur trapper in the Old West. It's just excellent. I loved it. Okay. That's one that came out on Netflix and the movie theater at the same time.
Interesting.
Yeah, we'll see more of that. In fact, there's another one on my list that was also a Netflix movie.
Oh.
Okay, seven on my list is Spike Lee's Black Klansman. This is probably Spike Lee's best movie in a quarter century. It has John David Washington. And I don't want to make you feel old, but John David Washington's real-life dad is Denzel Washington. So Denzel Washington,
wow.
Yeah, who's a baby boomer, as we are, mm-hmm. has a son old enough to star
wow.
in a Spike Lee movie.
How about that?
Yeah. So he plays Ron Stallworth, who is the first black cop in the Colorado Springs Police Department.
That's based on a true story?
True story, oh. 1972.
Okay.
And he's working undercover, and he decides to infiltrate the local KKK.
Wow.
Now, he uses his best white voice, talks to the head guy, gets invited to a meeting. Now, he can't go, obviously, because he's
right.
a black man.
Oh, wow.
So, of the white detectives on the police force at the time, they pick the one who sounds whose voice sounds the most like
wow.
Ron Stallworth's white voice. That man happens to be, played by Adam Driver, he's a Jewish man. That's another thing the KKK hates.
Mm.
And there's a couple of members who are suspicious that he might be Jewish. I don't know why, but they are. It's an interesting story, but typical Spike Lee, he doesn't miss the chance to tie what's going on in 1972 with today. He mm-hmm. gives us a replay of the Charlottesville riots of mm-hmm. 2017 and mm-hmm. ties it all into the Trump administration, very much in your face. But that's Spike Lee. That's what we expect from him. That's his forte, and I think he's hit a home run with this one.
Okay.
Number six on my list is Green Book. Now, this is one, it's a Peter Farrelly film. It's probably the best mainstream picture of the entire year. Viggo Mortensen plays a workaday Italian-American tough guy from the Bronx, and Mahershala Ali, who won a supporting actor Oscar 2 years ago for Moonlight, he plays Doc Shirley, who's a classically trained pianist, and he's going to take a tour of the Deep South in 1962. So Viggo Mortensen's character is not only his driver, but also his bodyguard.
Mm-hmm.
And some people have called this one Driving Miss Daisy in reverse.
Nah.
Remember Driving Miss Daisy?
Sure.
Okay, only this time the white guy drives the black
sure.
guy instead of the other way around. It's a lot deeper than you would expect. It is predictable. Once the premise is established, you can pretty much guess both men are going to learn something about the other's race and the other's heritage. They're going to soften their feelings towards the other one's race.
Mm-hmm.
They do. That's predictable. But it's a delightful ride. A wonderful screenplay. It's filled with memorable moments. And it's good enough to be Best Picture.
Wow.
I mean, it could be this year's Best Picture.
Wow.
Yeah.
Was it nominated?
Yes, it was.
Okay.
Yes,
okay.
It was.
Yeah. All right.
We'll talk about that when we do our Oscar show
another
in a few
show.
Weeks.
We
yeah,
will.
That's another show.
Okay.
Shall we move on to number five?
Yeah.
Okay, that's A Star is Born.
Oh.
The new A Star is Born. Bradley Cooper directed it and stars in it. It's the best version, I think, since the Judy Garland, James Mason version in 1954.
Wow. I didn't see that one. I saw the other two.
Okay. The Streisand version,
the Streisand
I didn't like.
The Streisand version.
Yeah.
Chris Christopherson.
Streisand version, I didn't care for. Chris Christopherson was actually good.
Mm-hmm.
My problem with Barbara Streisand was she showed no vulnerability. When he picks her out of the crowd to come up on stage and sing with him, she's in full diva mode right
yeah.
from the start.
Mm-hmm.
Lady Gaga,
oh my gosh, she's
you would
so good.
Think would be the same way,
no.
right? Because she's
mm-mm.
full diva in mm-mm. real life.
Yeah.
No, she nails the part.
Oh, yes, she does.
Yeah, she very vulnerable. He calls her up on stage. She doesn't want to come up and sing with him. She sings her own song with him. And she warms up to the crowd and the large crowd that he's used to because he's
already a star.
Already a big rock star. She nails that scene. The best scenes, I think, are those early scenes where she's learning to be a star. His career is on the downside. Hers is on the upside. She is so good. Now, she's never acted before, to my knowledge. she's so good, she could win Best Actress. I mean, she's really that good.
She is that good in this movie. She really, truly is.
Yeah. And Bradley Cooper is good, too.
He got nominated.
And he was nominated, too.
Yeah.
My problem, I have two problems.
Yeah.
One, he should have been nominated for Best Director.
I know. Well,
where's
we'll
his nomination for
that?
We'll talk about that when we get into the Oscars show.
I know.
My other issue is Sam Elliott. Everybody loves Sam Elliott.
Mm-hmm.
He plays Bradley Cooper's older brother and
which you find out later
confidant.
In the film. Yeah.
Yes, and I guess his manager, if you will. Mm-hmm. Sam Elliott plays Sam Elliott.
He's good at that.
He's good at that, but is that worthy of an Oscar nomination?
Well,
I say it's not. Okay. He was nominated.
Okay, yeah, he was.
Yeah.
He is good in it, though.
He is good, but he's always good.
Yeah,
everybody loves Sam Elliott, but that's no reason to nominate him.
I don't believe he's ever won an Oscar, either.
I don't know that he's ever been nominated.
Yeah.
He may have been. I take that back. He may have been at least one of the time. Look it up.
Wow. Star is Born. Great film. Disturbing ending, but great film.
Yeah, it's a sad ending, but then it that's the story. It's always
it.
A sad ending.
I know it.
Yeah. But this may very well be the best version of A Star is Born there is.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, I'm with you.
Yeah.
It's excellent.
Yeah.
From start to finish, excellent. The soundtrack is terrific. I went out and bought it, like the next day.
Yes, absolutely.
So it's very, very good. All right, we've gotten through your top five. We've got five to go.
No, actually, that was my number five.
That was number five.
Yeah.
So we've got four to go.
We have four to go.
We can either, why don't we take a break and come back and do your top four.
All right. Let's
see. We're talking to Andy Ray with Arts Channel Indy. He is the movie reviewer for Boomer Radio. And we'll be right back on Freedom 95.
Boomer Radio with Julie Patterson continues right after the break. This is Boomer Radio on Freedom 95.
Thank you so much for tuning in today. We're talking with Andy Ray of Arts Channel Indy. Andy is our movie reviewer. We are getting a glimpse into his top 10 for 2018. Our schedules have been disconnected, but we finally matched up. It's still the start of 2019. These films are going to be on DVD if they already aren't. And you'll probably want to see him. I usually take his list, and it takes me a little while to get through it, but I always enjoy everything you recommend.
Well, thank you.
Always, yeah. So let's kind of recap.
Okay.
Let's go 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5.
Number 10,
6,
I had Tully with Charlize Theron. Number 9, If Beale Street Could Talk, that's out now. Number 8 was the Coen Brothers Ballad of Buster Scruggs, which went straight to Netflix and also had a limited run in the movie theater. 7 is Spike Lee's Black Klansman. 6, I had Green Book, which is out now. And 5, I had A Star is Born.
Those are all good films.
Good.
I've seen a few of them.
Okay. Number 4 on my list is Alfonso Cuarón's Roma. Now, Alfonso Cuarón is a Mexican director who made Gravity a few years ago.
Oh, yeah.
That was with Sandra Bullock.
Yeah.
Excellent sci-fi movie. Okay. This one is not about the city of Rome. It's named for the Roma district in Mexico City, which is where Cuarón is from. This is probably...
Yes.
Now, I'm going to say this, but I'll probably think of an exception on the way home. It's probably the best foreign language film I've seen in at least 20 years.
So it has captions then?
Yeah.
It's
subtitled.
Interesting.
It's
subtitles.
Excellent. The story is about Cleo, who is a live-in domestic for a well-off doctor's family in 1971 Mexico City. She's practically a member of the family. She plays with the kids. She's a confidant for the mother. But she's still treated like hired help. One minute she'll be reading a bedtime story, the next minute they'll get after her for something that's not clean or not put away.
Right.
You know, that's how it is, okay? She becomes pregnant. Her boyfriend bails.
Oh!
She's afraid she might be fired by the family because now she'll have a baby to take care of.
Mm-hmm.
It's a simple story, but it's set against the backdrop of a lot of social upheaval, social unrest that was going on in Mexico City and really everywhere in 1971. I mean, this was the hippie movement, okay? And it was there's violence in the streets, and then we've got this simple story here of the live-in domestic. It's shot in beautiful black and white. It couldn't be more beautiful, and it's shot. Cuarón shoots it with a wide-angle lens, so that you get a lot in each frame at the same time. And where that comes into play, I think he's showing that nobody's ever alone. When Cleo sits down to cry in the city market, she's on one side of the screen crying. On the right side of the screen is a mariachi band playing and people dancing and partying and all this going on at the same time. Nobody who's listening to the mariachi band even notices Cleo.
Right, or pays attention.
But Cleo doesn't even notice them. She hears them. They're right there, but her her mind is on her own fate and her own issues, and she's in her own little world. And it's just wonderfully done. There's another scene later on where she's swimming out. She can't swim, mind you, but she's swimming out in the ocean to rescue one of the kids who has gone out too far.
What?
And as she's swimming against the waves, you get, again, the wide angle, the kid's over on one side, Cleo's on the other side, and she's swimming against the waves to get to this kid. Mm-hmm. It's a very moving, poignant movie. It's one of those movies, if you gave it to me and put me in an editing room and say, here, Andy, edit this movie, I wouldn't change a thing.
Oh,
it's perfect, exactly the way it is.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay. And that's Roma.
That's Roma.
Okay.
Number three on my list is called The Hate U Give.
Ah.
And I was very, very disappointed this movie was not nominated for anything.
Oh, wow.
It's directed by George Tillman Jr., whose background is more lighter fare, Barbershop, the Barbershop movies, and Soul Food. This is serious. There's been a lot of... In 2018 gave us a lot of portraits of African-American experience. This is the best of them. It's better than Spike Lee's Black Klansman. I'll tell you why in a minute. But the story revolves around a girl named Star. She's played by Amandla Stenberg, who is in The Hunger Games. Her performance is one of the best anybody gave in any movie at all this year.
Wow.
And was not nominated.
Wow.
Amandla Stenberg. She plays a black girl attending a mostly white charter school. One night, she's in a car with Khalil, who's her friend from the ghetto, friend of the family. Her family's known Khalil and his family for years. They get pulled over by a white cop. The white cop kills Khalil in a misunderstanding. Now, before you can say, oh, I know where this is going, you really don't. There's a lot of levels to this movie. For example, Star doesn't want to tell her white classmates that she was the one in the car because she's afraid they won't understand.
Mm.
And the talk around her school is, a lot of it is, her classmates are understanding the story more from the white cop's point of view, which is perfectly understandable. That's their background. They're white people. She's not. Her dad is played by Russell Hornsby, Star's dad. He's a former gang member doing his best to raise his family in the ghetto. The media latches on to Star as the passenger once they find out. She was the passenger in Khalil's car. Her dad tries to shield her from the media. His old gang members come back to him. They don't want Star to say anything about the gang in the media. See, there's a lot of levels to this movie.
Yeah.
It's not just simply a story about a white cop who accidentally killed a black kid. There's a lot going on here.
Do we get the sense that it's an accident or that it's just flat out wrong and misjudgment or?
Boy, I'm gonna answer that with misjudgment.
Okay.
Star's uncle is a cop. He's a black cop. And he explains to her a lot of the harsh realities of how cops are trained to handle various situations based on who is the driver of the car. What does he look like? What is he wearing? What is his racial background, et cetera, et cetera. This is the type of movie Spike Lee would have made earlier in his career. Now Spike Lee, we just discussed Black Klansman. He's making a movie set in 1972. That's all fine and good. But in his younger years, he would have made The Hate U Give.
Okay.
And that's part of the reason why I think I like The Hate U Give better. It's a little more urgent. It's more up to date. It's more current.
And do we get satisfaction at the end or not?
Yes.
We do?
Yes, we do. It's a very satisfying ending. Maybe almost too satisfying given the reality.
Okay.
But it's a crowd-pleasing ending. I can't fault it for that.
All right.
You know, it's not one of those endings where they pulled a rabbit out of the hat.
Right.
You know, it's a for-real ending. It seems logical, but it is a very happy ending.
Okay.
Okay, number two on my list is Bo Burnham's Eighth Grade.
What?
Eighth Grade.
It's called Eighth Grade.
Eighth Grade.
I've never heard of that.
I think we actually discussed it once, maybe last summer or spring.
Huh.
It was out late last summer. Bo Burnham's a comedian. This is his first screenplay. It's an original screenplay. It's his first job directing, and it's fantastic. It revolves around a girl named Kayla. She's played by Elsie Fisher, who's a voice actress. She's the one who voices Agnes in the Despicable Me films.
Okay.
She's so good you don't even realize she's acting.
She makes it look easy.
She makes it look easy. It's the most accurate depiction of teenage life I've ever seen in the movies. Kayla, it's not that she's unpopular. I won't say that. But she's more invisible. Nobody really notices her. She just blends into the scenery. She's just graduated eighth grade. She's going to start high school. She doesn't have a best friend. This is odd, very odd for a movie about a teenager, because usually screenwriters will write a best friend into the story so that we know the lead character's feelings. She explains them to the best friend, therefore we know. Kayla doesn't have a best friend. And what she deals with in eighth grade are situations like this. She gets invited to the popular girls' pool party that summer. Now, should she go or should she not go? If she stays home, she essentially remains invisible. But if she goes, then she sets herself up for ridicule. She doesn't have the best-looking body. She doesn't have the most hip bathing suit. She doesn't hang out with the hip kids, but at least she'd be there. Yeah. On the other hand, would she be made fun of? These are the things that she's wrestling with.
That you think about in eighth grade.
Sure. grade, and even in high school. This is not Fast Times at Ridgemont High. Not that I didn't enjoy a lot of that movie, but in eighth grade, teens are actually played by teens. They're acting like teens.
Okay.
They're not acting like adults pretending to be teens.
Okay.
As we so often see. Huh. And I want to tip my hat to that dad, the character of her dad. He's played by Josh Hamilton, who's a character actor. He's always there with a dumb joke or dumb pun to alleviate the seriousness and heaviness that Kayla feels about her life. But his character turns out to be more astute and caring than any other parent in any similar type movie. He really turns out to be a major character, and the scenes that she has with her dad are some of the best I've seen in the movies this year.
Okay.
Really, very, very good. I loved eighth grade.
All right. Wow.
Okay.
Okay.
Number one on my list.
Yes.
We'll discuss it, and then I'll tell you what's wrong with it and why you've never heard of it. It's called The Long Dumb Road. It was made by Hannah Fidel, who is an IU film school graduate.
Oh, cool.
I think we discussed her with Mary Pat. Mary Pat looked her up, and I was correct. She is a graduate of IU film school. She made this movie called The Long Dumb Road. It stars Tony Revolori, who is the young apprentice in the Grand Budapest Hotel. Here he plays a boy named Nat, who's driving from his home in East Texas out to L.A. to attend film school. He's going to start film school. Jason Mantzoukas, who's a character actor, been around a while, he plays Richard. Richard's a good-for-nothing drifter who fixes Nat's car when it breaks down out in the middle of nowhere, West Texas.
Handy to have that guy in the car.
Very handy, but he won't accept money. Instead, he says, you drive me to Vegas on your way out to L.A., then you can go from Vegas to L.A. So I know what you're thinking. Not another road trip movie.
That's what it sounds like. It is a long, dumb road.
That's exactly what it is. Another road trip movie. Once I figured out that's where this was going, I almost got up and walked out of the movie theater. But it's brilliant. This is a series of little vignettes. For example, in New Mexico, they visit Richard's old high school crush. It was never even a girlfriend, just somebody he had a crush on. Mm-hmm. They look her up. They visit her. The woman's daughter actually kind of falls for Nat, which is an interesting side story.
Mm-hmm.
There's another bit where they're at a motel for the night and they have a chance meeting with two girls. They get to talking to him. Next thing you know, Richard proposes to one of them.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
I know. But this is not a plot-driven movie. Each story is like a play within a play. Hannah Fidel lets each thread play itself out before moving on to the next one. In other words, there's not a plot convenience that forces us to move on to the next stop. We play out one story, and then we move on in our little car, which Richard has fixed, and then we go on to a next scene, and then a next scene. It really is a great setup. She lets the actors act without forcing unnecessary plot twists on them. It's the wittiest, most original dialogue I've heard in a movie since Hell or High Water 2 years ago. It's that good. Now, here's my problem with it.
Okay.
You've never heard of this movie. Mm-mm. No one has.
Why?
It showed one time in Indianapolis. That was last April at Indie Film Fest.
Oh, you're kidding.
That's where I saw it, and that's where I fell in love with it. Great audience. They were very receptive. Unfortunately, Hannah Fidel herself wasn't in the audience that night, but it was just a great showing. It opened in New York and Los Angeles in November. It must not have done well because it hasn't opened, I don't want to say anywhere else, but not many other places. Okay.
Okay.
It did not open in
India. Why? Did it just not have the promotion behind it, probably?
It doesn't, and there are no big stars.
There's no money, but yeah.
Yeah, and it's very unfortunate. I don't think it's going to open in Indianapolis. As the more time goes on, I believe it's not going to open.
Would we be able to find it on a DVD, you think? Or Netflix or somewhere?
I checked to see if it's coming out on Netflix or Amazon Prime. So far, it does not have a date.
Interesting.
But keep looking.
Yeah.
It's worth it. Check your library.
The Long Dumb Road. Okay.
I thought it was so, every now and then my favorite of the year will be some little independent movie, and this year was one of those years.
Mm-hmm.
And not to say there weren't some good blockbusters. Again, I love Green Book. I love The Star Is Born.
Sure.
But there's something about The Long Dumb Road that I just fell in love with, and it's number one on my list.
Wow. Well, that's quite a list, and we never know what to expect from Andy Ray, and I like that about you. It's not predictable.
It's not same old.
And it gives us some things on our list to look forward to.
Yes.
That maybe wouldn't have been on it before.
Right.
So, all right. We'll have you back in a few weeks. We'll talk Oscars.
Yes.
The Oscars are coming up.
They are.
February the 24th. We'll do our February 23rd show.
About
the Oscars with Andy Ray. So
very good.
You'll want to be here.
All right. Thanks, Julie.
You're welcome. Freedom 95.